Good morning, everyone, and welcome to this Euractiv online debate, which is kindly supported by Gas Infrastructure Europe. My name is Frédéric Simon. I'm the Energy and Environment Editor of Euractiv, and I'm delighted to be hosting this discussion today about the decarbonization of gas and the role that LNG import terminals can play in this context. As you all know, Europe's LNG terminals were designed initially to import gas coming exclusively from fossil sources, but there are now also long-term plans to modernize this infrastructure in the future as Europe moves to decarbonize gas and become climate neutral by 2050. Now, this also raises a number of questions related first to the different types of gas that could be imported via those terminals, and second, whether the infrastructure is actually ready to accept these new low carbon gases, such as hydrogen. Now, to discuss this topic today, I'm happy to welcome Tudor Constantinescu, Principal Advisor at the European Commission's Energy Directorate, Thierry de Scotener, who chairs the Terminal for the Future Working Group at GIE, Giorgo Tsatsimarkakis from Hydrogen Europe, and Jonathan Stern from the Oxford Institute of Energy Studies. Welcome to all of you for joining us today. We'll start this virtual conference with short opening statements from the speakers, and then we'll move on to a Q&A session that will also include questions from the audience. Now, to ask a question, if you're in the audience, just click on the Q&A button, which is at the bottom of your screen, and then put your question in writing, and I'll try and take as many of them as possible. I think that's all for me now. So, Mr. Constantinescu, the floor is yours.
Thank you. Thank you very much, Frederic. I'm very pleased to be here and sorry not being able to connect my video. I have to express my appreciation for you organizing this event, but also for the Gas Infrastructure Europe to welcome the initiative. I think it's very wise to do it and proves that it's an industry which is trying to modernize and to look forward to the challenges, but also the opportunities we have ahead. I saw the study and we see the four pathways which are discussed with their own, let's say, advantages. And this is very interesting. It's not only for importing maybe from outside Europe, but even sometimes inside Europe. Because we know, for example, for hydrogen, if we use pipelines, this is economically below maybe 1,500 kilometers. And higher distances we may need even inside Europe, even if it is to move from Spain to Northeast Europe to use energy terminals. Now, this being said, let me just put this briefly into the context, of course, which is the context, first of all, of the Green Deal, with the objective to have, as our president said, so on the line, carbon neutral continent, the first one by 2050. And for this, we need to accelerate. We need to accelerate, and I think this is an important element which I want to underline, is that for 2030, if it is to achieve bigger emission reductions, then we need to invest more now. So if we want to achieve 50-55% decarbonization by 2030, it means to put more investments upfront, to invest more in the CapEx now, in order to lower the overall cost during the lifetime of these investments. It means to reduce later on the OPEX and to invest more now. And this investment more now, which was planned under Green Deal, it is so that helps sustainability, it helps avoiding lock-in effects, and now furthermore, it helps the recovery after this terrible COVID crisis, because we need to invest more now, and what we invest now will help creating jobs and growth, will also help all the other dimensions of the Green Deal, not only decarbonization. So I think this is a very good moment in time to think about modernizing and investing the economy and the energy sector and the energy infrastructure. This will benefit to all the objectives of the energy system, which, by the way, becomes much more complex. And I cannot say now what solution will prevail, you see that we need to adapt and to have the possibility to tap into the opportunities brought by different technologies. It was much simpler in the past. Now it's clear this energy system is much more complex and we'll need to put all these solutions in a smarter way together. And they'll need to coexist. Just to illustrate, for example, and maybe Jorgo will develop this when we speak about refueling stations, which will not only be for the classical fuels, but also for electric cars or for hydrogen cars, the same maybe in some cases for the terminals, maybe not all of them, and which will have to find its own most appropriate business environment to adapt. So this is just as a mean to introduce the topic here and to welcome the initiative, which I think fits very well into the Green Deal objectives of modernizing the economy and investing further into our energy infrastructure and the decarbonization pathways.
All right, thank you, Tudor.
Thank you.
Let me turn now to Thierry Descotenaire from GIE.
Okay, thank you very much, Frédéric. It's a pleasure to be here and to say a few words about the future of LNG terminals, which I'm leading at Gaz LNG Europe, part of Gaz Infrastructure Europe. Actually, for the time being, LNG is a very successful fuel. It provides about 20% of gas for all Europe. It provides a cheap commodity. It provides security of supply. So for the time being, it's a good success story. However, the future is about the Green Deal. It's about decarbonization. It's about green fuel. So what could be the role of LNG terminals then in the future? And then if we look at the future energy system, there are many things of which we speak about today, like electrification, but this is not the full picture. Actually, for the future energy system, the big challenge will be to bring the right amount of energy at the right place at the right time, so that supply and demand can match at all time, at all locations. And for that, we need to tap every renewable resource possible, especially the cheapest one, where they are produced in big quantities with big efficiencies. And we are looking at what could be the role of LNG terminals there. So they are on the shore. So bringing energy by ship for long distances is probably the core business of LNG terminals. And we are working on that within the working group. And we have identified four main pathways with many sub pathways where LNG terminals can play a role. So the first part, we could decarbonize the upstream part. So we could have a production of green energy upstream in other countries than Europe, outside Europe, or even in some regions with big resources like the Iberian Peninsula, like Italy or Greece, and bring it to Northern Europe where there are less resources, or in the opposite direction for wind energy. So greening upstream is one of the possibilities. And then we bring by ship green energy towards terminals where they are now. Another option is to decarbonize at the terminals themselves. So continuing using natural gas, for example, to terminals, but producing hydrogen there at the terminal. That's probably a temporary solution, but it could nevertheless start the hydrogen economy in a big scale. Another possibility is to use hydrogen itself, produce hydrogen outside of Europe very cheaply and bring it at huge quantities by ship to terminals. Terminals have to be upgraded in this case, of course, but you have several options for transporting hydrogen. You can use ships, you can use pipelines, you can transport it in liquefied form, compressed natural gas, in ISO containers. You can have several options. Many of these technologies are not mature yet, but they can be bring to scale quite efficiently. And then another pathway is to use other energy carriers, other fuels that may be more appropriated, like ammonia, like methanol, that you can also use in some sectors. So you need a view on the upstream side, on the downstream side, which energy carriers would you use? And then the terminals come into the midstream side, how to bring these sources with the new production at the right time, at the right location. So GIE works on these different pathways with many sub-pathways. We have already shared ideas and views with many stakeholders, and we will continue that. Our goal is to come by about in October, end of the year, with detailed studies on the costs of the technologies, the strength, the opportunities of every pathway themselves, and also coming with policy recommendations, as many of the technologies are not mature yet.
Okay, thank you very much, Thierry de Scotenaire, for this very good overview. For sure, there'll be plenty of attention around this study expected around the end of the year about the costs and the policy recommendations. Now, let me turn to Giorgio Chatzimarkakis.
Many thanks for inviting us and for giving me the floor. Thierry already outlined the different pathways. I have to say thank you to GIE. We have a very friendly relation. We have a lot of members in common. We don't regard the infrastructure, nor in hydrogen, neither in LNG, as stranded assets, because as Thierry already described, there are possibilities to use it for renewable energy. But let me put it into a little bit broader picture. Tudor Constantinescu described very well, so to say, the big frame. He was himself very, very active in delivering a long-term strategy. And this long-term strategy that came long before the Green Deal even was thought about, hydrogen played a quite substantial role. So all the ideas of bringing hydrogen in are not super new. However, due to COVID-19 and due to the crisis we just live, I see a certain acceleration of some of these points. I think there will be quite soon in summer an announcement of different initiatives around hydrogen, and it's time to have this hydrogen strategy on the level of the European Union, European Commission. But also we are expecting the fourth gas package, whose newest name is, I think, energy system integration. And there also the question of how the different grids can be coupled will play a role, and hydrogen, of course, needs to be seen. And also in the strategy, it's the question of how to scale it up. Because what we are discussing here, all the long-term strategies now with the Green Deal and with the possibilities that the green recovery stimulus gives us, we have to look at scaling this up. And we also have to try to think about how this is possible. Hydrogen Europe has presented this paper here, which is called 2x40 Green Hydrogen Initiative. So it's about 2x40, 1x40 gigawatt in Europe, and the other one outside Europe, so especially in Northern Africa, Arab Peninsula, and Ukraine. And there already the question of how to transport the hydrogen that is produced cheaply, as Thierry already said, very cheaply, especially in Northern Africa and Arab Peninsula, how to transport it. We have different methods. We have, of course, gas pipelines that are going to be refurbished and retrofitted. But we will also see a lot of hydrogen being liquefied. It's 100 degrees lower than liquid natural gas, and then be transported via containers, via vessels, but I see rather the containers there, to Europe. And here we can build upon an idea that we developed lately with our friends from the renewable sector, the hydrogenewables. So basically there will be a lot of influx, and this will be the basis then for different pathways. Thierry described already some of them. There will be pure hydrogen, there will be ammonia. There are different sectors looking into it, and they are looking less and less into LNG as such. They are looking more and more into the different fuels. So in shipping, ammonia will play a substantial role. And in some truck OEMs, we see that they opt for liquefied hydrogen in the truck itself. And the boil-off effect of a liquid hydrogen in a truck that runs all the time is not that much as in a passenger car. So all in all, it's a lot of developments going on. It's new. A lot of these things are new. If you ask me now, Frederick, what's the cost of a liquefied hydrogen hub to replace an LNG hub? We don't know. We have some ideas, but it is possible. We can learn a lot from how LNG was imported and then processed for the hydrogen world. And we are very, very happy that all these talks start now and are accelerated also by this debate here. Thanks very much, Frederik.
Right, thank you. Let me turn now to Jonathan Stern.
Thank you, and as with the other speakers, thank you for allowing me to speak here. I want to turn the conversation a little bit more towards LNG and perhaps a little bit more towards the present and the next few years, perhaps even the next decade. The work that we've done tries to suggest to LNG suppliers that they're going to need to up their game in relation to emissions, and particularly in relation to methane emissions. Now, the general consensus is that from an LNG value chain, you lose around 11 to 13% of the initial gas feed by the time it gets to the regasification plant. And this is because of the very energy intensive nature of liquefaction. Obviously, with decarbonisation speeding up in Europe and a much greater emphasis on methane emissions, I believe that if we hadn't had the crisis, we would already have had the Commission's first publication on this subject, or rather its new publication on this subject last month, and we're still expecting it any time. For me, there's a really important question about how LNG, before we get to hydrogen or other decarbonized products, continues, given that, as Thierry said, global and indeed EU imports of LNG have been rising fast over the last couple of years. And with the amount of new product coming onto the market, we would expect this to continue. Now, there's a serious difficulty with particularly methane emissions about measuring them, and very little agreement on how you agree on the global warming potential and how you agree on where to measure them, whether by satellite or at ground level or by drones. There are various supporters for the different measurement methods, but the point about this is that the LNG community has got to do a much better job of actually measuring, reporting, and indeed verifying or certifying these emissions. Because although we have a lot of very good industry initiatives like OGCI and the methane guiding principles, what these tend to focus on is corporate reductions in emissions. Whereas what we really need from the LNG community is value chain emissions, so that we know when the LNG is landed in an EU, at an EU border, what the methane footprint and indeed the greenhouse gas footprint is of this LNG. Now, this is, I think, something quite urgent and needs to happen very quickly, because LNG is going to continue to be delivered at these terminals and potentially in larger volumes, and at the moment is extremely cheap and therefore relatively attractive. This will eventually end up, it seems to me, as part of the Commission's initiative to introduce carbon or greenhouse gas border taxation on all products entering the EU. And for me, the important starting point is that we get a good grip and indeed a verified grip on what the footprint of the LNG entering the terminals is today and how this can be reduced. Thank you very much.
Right, thank you, Jonathan, for making that point, indeed crucial, about the decarbonization of the entire value chain. And I understand there's still a few data gaps there. Let me maybe kick off the discussion with a very general question. Just looking very briefly at the four different pathways, the four different decarbonization pathways that were highlighted by GIE, all of them converge, it seems, around hydrogen. So at the end of the day, we're really talking about a hydrogen strategy, hydrogen infrastructure strategy here. What are your expectations when it comes to the proposal that is expected to come out of the European Commission around the summer? And maybe Thierry Descotenaire, maybe you can start.
Yes, about the proposal for, well, there will be energy system integration, which is something that we welcome very much, and showing the synergies between the electricity side and the gas infrastructure side. I mean, gas in the wide sense, it's natural gas for the time being, it's biomethane, biogas in the coming future, it's hydrogen as well, that will develop in many segments. Well, this is the starting point for infrastructure. We will need a big infrastructure anyway. In the future energy systems, there will be a lot of production decentralized, consumed decentralized, but also in a centralized way. And we will need to transport energy over very long distances. So what we would expect from the Commission in the next policy packages that will come regarding infrastructure is something that emphasizes the role of the infrastructure in the future, and that enables new markets to develop, emerging technologies to come on, emerging hydrogen initiatives in industrial sectors to connect them together to create ultimately a European network and around a framework that incentivizes investments. To do so, they said it very clearly at the beginning, we need to invest a lot in CapEx, and that will be very useful for the future energy system and for Europe as well.
Yorgo Chatzimarkakis, maybe a few thoughts on the hydrogen strategy that's expected in the summer. What do you think should be the infrastructure elements of that, and also reflecting on the different pathways, the four different pathways that were highlighted by GIE?
Points for the end of the year, when the guidelines for the CEF Connecting Europe facility and TEN-T corridors and PCIs will be proposed. Here I expect a massive idea of how to scale up the infrastructure to retrofit it, and of course a prioritization for low carbon gases, especially hydrogen. Now, I think around summer, June, July, we expect these two elements. One element that has just been mentioned by Thierry, the energy system integration package, where indeed sector coupling will be at one forefront, one of the focuses. And what I expect here, to cut it very short, is that some of the shortcomings of RED II, so the Renewable Energy Directive recast, with regards to hydrogen, can be overcome. We have, give you one example, the principle of additionality. So you cannot produce cheap hydrogen in Europe if you don't have an additional renewable capacity. The idea sounds logical, but it would not allow hydrogen to really help to balance the systems, to do a sector coupling job that hydrogen can do. When it comes to the strategy, to the hydrogen strategy, what we expect there is scale. It doesn't make sense to prioritize low carbon gases in December in these guidelines that we expect if you don't look for scale of the production of renewable hydrogen or decarbonized hydrogen, blue hydrogen. And that is what we expect. We also expect that we overcome, because we see that less and less, but still it's there, this ideological gap between electrons and molecules. We cannot afford this. We have still some people believing that 100% of the European energy system could run on electrons. That is very, very difficult and extremely expensive. And that is why we just offer to use hydrogen as an enabler, as the missing link between the different sectors and the different grids. And this idea, this basic idea, needs to govern, I would say, the hydrogen strategy.
Let me put now this question about decarbonization. The European Commission has already warned a number of times that there was a risk of a fossil fuel lock-in with upgraded gas infrastructure. Is there such a risk for the hydrogen infrastructure that you're talking about? And how could this risk be avoided? Thierry de Scotenard, maybe a few thoughts.
Yeah, that's the whole idea about reusing terminals for future use, for future molecules, for hydrogen, for new energy carriers if they are needed. Of course, that will require retrofit, sometimes difficult retrofit for the time being. We don't know exactly what would cost the retrofit of an LNG tank towards a hydrogen tank. The temperature is much lower, as Jorgo said. It's not easy, but well, challenges. I'm an engineer, and engineers can solve a lot of things. I'm confident that we will find a way to do it. About lock-in is really if you invest in something now that you are pretty sure it will not be used, will not have economic value at the level of the investments that you do today. We don't see very many of these infrastructures like that. What you will see in the future is demand for energy will remain more or less where it is now, unless you have the industrializations of areas. What will change mostly is the supply of energy. It will mostly come from renewables within Europe, but we will need more intra-European flows. We will need other kinds of imports of flows, so infrastructure will be different. But operators are looking really at how to avoid locking. Well, locking is also linked to a rather financial aspect. So if stranded asset is also linked to a financial assessment of the asset. If you have an asset now which has a 20 years lifetime and it can live during the transition to the energy system, it is fine. It will not be a lock-in because it will be depreciated by the time you don't need it anymore. The only real problem of lock-ins is whether the economic lifetime in regulation, in accounting, is longer than the economic lifetime for society, taking the new goals into account. So it can be solved in pretty many of the ways. And now people are also looking at retrofitting all the gas infrastructure, whether it is transport, pipelines, storage, LNG, and that could provide solutions to avoid lock-in.
Thanks, Tejeda Escoteneia, for that comment. Maybe reflecting on that, Tudor Constantinescu, about the risk of creating lock-ins into fossil fuel infrastructure. Tudor, can you share a few thoughts about that? What are the Commission's views on this, and how you think this could be avoided?
Thank you, Frederic. I think it was already touched by the previous speakers, but from our side, we acknowledge that if we want to get to the 2050 carbon neutrality, and if we want to increase the level of decarbonization by 2030, it's clear we need to decarbonize the entire energy system and all the energy carriers. And in the analysis we have done for long term, for 2050, we see that it's not possible to have only electricity. Maybe 40% of the final energy consumption will continue to be in the form of gas and liquids, what Jorgo calls molecules. And these gas and liquids will also have to be decarbonized. So not only the electricity, but also these molecules will have to be decarbonized. And therefore, actually, hydrogen started to emerge more and more as a very important solution in what we call energy system integration or sector integration. Because this will facilitate decarbonization of the various sectors, so that at the same time, higher and better integration, more cost-effective integration of a large amount of renewables will facilitate large-scale energy storage and so on. Of course, we also acknowledge that a transition doesn't means that you move from one point to the other without intermediary steps. And we are aware that in these intermediary steps, we need a number of solutions to coexist. We'll need to have also hydrogen coming from other sources, not only from renewables, but to be decarbonized. So like what is called sometimes blue hydrogen. So these solutions will have for a while to coexist and to support each other, but with the final goal and objective to have the decarbonization by 2050. Regarding the use of infrastructure, this may play a role, the existing infrastructure. We also may need to develop new infrastructure. The issue of using the existing gas infrastructure can be supportive maybe in the beginning for upscaling some investments in renewable hydrogen. But again, here we should be careful because it's more maybe cost effective to have a dedicated hydrogen infrastructure. We have to see also where this hydrogen will play its most important role and where we'll make more money. So we have to look also from the perspective of the hydrogen and of the hydrogen producers. Maybe direct use in heavy duty transport, in maritime applications, in railways, maybe in the future for the e-fuels, in particular for aviation, which otherwise would be a sector difficult to decarbonize. And then the carbon intensive industries, the ammonia, which is for the fertilizers, but also the steel, also the refining, will all need direct use of hydrogen. So have the needs and to make sure that we create both supply and demand. So to upscale the opportunities, we need first of all to create supply and demand, then to have the infrastructure in place, and then to have the rules and the markets which allow this hydrogen to play a role in a EU-wide internal market and to be a transparent market in which we'll find its best solutions. So it'll be also a gradual process, I would say, in this respect.
Tudor, while you were speaking, I think all of that, it seems, points in the direction, as you said, of a much more complex energy system in the future with a lot more different types of gases coming in. Do you see regional gas markets developing in the future within the EU, depending on the different pathways that countries choose? And that is related to the cost as well. Right? Maybe you could say a few words on that, Tudor?
Yeah, I can say a few words that, in general, as we said, the energy system is becoming much more complex, and the opportunities, the resources are diverse across the continent. A lot of opportunities will be in the industrial and coastal areas due to the proximity also of the renewable production centers being on wind or solar, but also due to the various ports, which can enable the import of various forms of energy and decarbonate and renewable forms of energy, including in the form of gas. So it's normal that the diversity of solutions will increase, and we can have a lot of more local or regional solutions to be developed. We can imagine this, of course. Now, exactly how this will be structured, I cannot predict now, but what we will aim is, of course, to put a value on the regional opportunities to encourage, because sometimes these opportunities, of course, are not stopping at the border, and the regional approach is proved to work quite well in the energy markets, but at the same time, to maintain and to strengthen the unity of the internal energy market in energy. So therefore the solutions, and this touches also on the gas infrastructure when we speak, we may need to make sure that the energy and the energy carriers will be able to flow from north to south and east to west, and not to create too many islands, and in any case to have a common regulatory framework and to enable the opportunities to scale up across the entire Europe.
Maybe other speakers want to reflect a bit on the regionalization of gas markets. Is there a risk in a way that the market becomes fragmented more than it is today? Thierry de Scotenaire, maybe you can say.
Jonathan was first. No.
Could I just reflect on a couple of things that particularly Tudor has said? I think it's not only regionalization. I'm wondering where this leaves the whole, as it were, single market, internal market idea for natural gas. I mean, we have spent 30 years creating the single market with liquid hubs, with network codes. I think this is going to make things extremely complicated. Not that I'm suggesting we shouldn't do it. What I'm saying is I think this could take a lot of time, just as it has already taken a lot of time for natural gas. And something that is also interesting to reflect on is whether we need to communicate very strongly to the suppliers of LNG and probably natural gas as well, that we intend to do this. Because after all, they will need to make other arrangements, whether it's decarbonizing their gas upstream and going Hyogo's way for hydrogen, whether it's blue hydrogen with CCS, which has not made a huge amount of progress at present. But I think that we really need to think through ourselves how we're going to change the current framework, which Tudor referred to, and how we're going to communicate this in sufficient time for suppliers of natural gas and LNG to make their own preparations.
Do you hear this, Cotonel? Maybe a reflection on that about the speed of the transition in a way, which is the point that Jonathan Stern raised.
Yeah, that's true that it took really a lot of good amount of time to make the internal market for gas. I think it's a bit different here. If you look at renewables developed in many countries, on each country with its own policy regulations, but now there is really a momentum to say that you should develop the resources when they are cheapest, where there's the most of resources, but you have to develop the sun in Spain and not in Finland. It's interesting to do it in Finland, but it's better to do it in Spain. No, it will change. And these regional aspects, I think, could be overcome with a clear view from the European Commission. And there are many benefits that are now being quantified by players, and I think we can go much faster than we did in the past for the natural gas market, or copying what was done with the renewable, the successful story of wind and sun. So we can go a bit faster. And about LNG, I think the LNG value chain is quite a good track record in making strong changes quite fast. When we started a long time ago, it was just with gas from Algeria, and then it moved a complete new wave with LNG from Qatar and from other sources, Russia. Afterwards, we developed the small-scale LNG, the mid-scale LNG, the ballast, the bunkering market, the reloading markets, the transshipment things. All these things went quite fast. If you look at the depreciation time of our industry, many things like that developed quite fast. And of course, if we have now to import hydrogen, that will be a major change. There will be major retrofit, major engineering work. But if the direction is clear, I think we can make it happen quite fast in perhaps 10, in the next 20 years, I'm pretty sure that the major changes can be made.
Okay, let me turn now to some questions that were raised by the audience, and the one that's receiving the most likes, should I say, it's almost like we have a live Facebook here, is a question about the costs. So what investments are needed in order to use LNG terminals to store hydrogen? Thierry de Scotenaire, I think you started answering that question.
Well, and we don't know yet. We don't know yet. This is not a very good answer, I know, but well, every terminal is a bit different. On some terminals, you have more room to make a new, completely new storage of it. Well, we don't know exactly what it is. It has to be connected to pure hydrogen pipelines. Up to what I understand from engineers, there is most advanced made in retrofitting of pipelines. And there is engineering work now about retrofitting of terminals. And I expect that by the end of the year, we will know much more what it means, but it will be anyway a percentage of the building of a new one. It will be anyway much lower than the building of a new one. That's the only thing I can say. It's not much, but that means also that the pure hydrogen economy can start with retrofitting of pipe and retrofitting of terminals at a much lower cost than the gas market started a long time ago, because you don't have to make green fields everywhere.
A related question coming from the audience as well is They would like to know whether any new LNG terminals that are being built now would need costly upgrade and lots, and basically would be fit immediately to take in hydrogen. Would any of the new terminals, as far as you're aware, that are being planned in Europe, would in principle be ready to carry hydrogen?
As far as I know, the answer is no for the ones that are being built now, but for the ones that are being thought of now, for the projects that are not, for which engineering has not been designed, I'm pretty sure that the investors will make it hydrogen ready or future proof. I know one example in Germany when it should be part of the concept, but for the ones that are being built now, this is not the case. For the ones that are on the plan now, this is probably the case. And to me, it makes sense because it adds value over the long term. Now, it is, in most cases, it is not a big issue because these terminals are depreciated along with the upstream segment, which is often depreciated in 20 to 30 years. So that makes that by 20 or 30 years, a big amount of money would be available for the retrofit. So it is less an issue than for pipelines, for which the depreciation time is often 50 years, sometimes even more. So this is more a problem for them to raise the money, which is enough to make the retrofit. For terminals, the money would be a bit easier to get.
Tudor Constantinescu, maybe a word on that. So is that something that regulators at some point could impose, which is that any new LNG terminal or gas infrastructure that is being built has to be future-proof and able to carry hydrogen or other low-carbon gases?
I think it's a bit early now to answer that question, but what I can say is, it's definitely something we'll have to look into. And in any case, what we have, as I said, is to try on one hand to avoid the lock-in effects, on the other hand, to avoid fragmentations of the market. Therefore, for example, when it comes to this issue of using the gas infrastructure, and which I said, okay, in for a transition period can make sense and can support upscaling of hydrogen, but maybe not to the extent where it would pose problems to, because you have discontinuity in the gas market across Europe and you cannot transport anymore the gas from one point to the other. This would not be definitely something we would want, and we don't want either to create a lock-in effect and to make hydrogen capture just to the extent it can serve the gas market. So it's indeed a dynamic process, not only in terms of technologies, but also in terms of policies, and where we need to take all these elements into account. At the same time, we have to look exactly at what and how technologies evolve. We have learned from the past that sometimes technologies evolve fast, and therefore, even in the clean energy package, when we have started to put new provisions, for example, to elaborate more on storage, where, by the way, hydrogen can also play an important role, we realize that sometimes technologies evolve faster than the market arrangements. And this is one of the things we have tried to realize, to bring regulations up to speed with the technological developments and to be a driver and an enabler for new technologies to come in and to support them. And this is something which now is more and more embedded into the policy making, and trying to make and to plan all this, not only infrastructure, but in general, investments in a way which will support the longer term objectives and make it cost effective for the society overall.
Another question from the audience, from Shobhan Hall, from S&P Global Platts. When does the European Commission plan to propose its gas package or decarbonization package? And actually, how is it going to be called now? That's the first question. And then the second question is the European Commission looking to regulate LNG terminals? So I guess the question is for you, Tudor.
Now, when it will be First of all, now for this summer is here, we plan to come with the strategy on smart sector integration, on energy system integration, and I think this will touch on a number of points, from what we need to do in renewables to what we do need to do in terms of market arrangements, what we need to do in terms of the gas market. And subsequently in the autumn and next year, we'll go deeper into all these elements, and I don't know the name now, but try to definitely tackle these challenges and make sure that we have the market arrangements in place which to support the objectives of decarbonization. And as I underlined in the beginning, gaseous form of energy will continue to play an important role for the 2050 perspective. We need to make sure that this energy kind will be decarbonized. So therefore, the framework we'll try to put in place will look into these opportunities, and we'll see what needs to be regulated and what doesn't need to be regulated. As you know, we try to promote as much as possible a competitive energy market, and we regulate only those assets where this is by nature, in a way, necessary and useful to do.
Thank you, Tudor. Another question from the audience, and I guess this could be directed to any of the speakers, maybe Jonathan Stern. How can methane emissions be brought to zero if not through a complete phase out of fossil gas? If you want to reduce that risk to zero, probably you would need a complete phase out of fossil gas. Question for you, Jonathan.
I think if you're talking about zero, that is probably correct. If you're considering the possibility of autothermal reforming, which you can convert, you will still get some methane emissions in the value chain. And the problem is that you'll still get emissions in the upstream. Now, I think that realistically, we're talking about reducing those emissions to much lower levels than we currently have. Although, as I said in my introduction, I'm not sure that we have a very good handle on exactly how big those emissions are, particularly in some jurisdictions. But I think it is unrealistic to say that we will reduce methane emissions to zero. The burden of my introduction was, I think we can do a much better job than is currently being done with reducing overall greenhouse gas emissions in relation to LNG.
Methane emissions, other comments, maybe Thierry Descotenaire, would you see ultimately a desirable objective to phase out entirely fossil gas in order to reduce those emissions to zero?
Well, if you want to reduce methane emissions, you have to stop methane, whatever it is, methane from fossil origin, from agriculture origin, any kind of methane. So this is probably not a solution. It can be reduced very much. So this is what many operators are working on, downstream, upstream, midstream. It's a concern for the several years. I think the biggest concern is, as Jonathan mentioned, is about to know exactly how much there is. So for many people know how much it is, but it's not for the whole value chain in all the places around the world. But many operators are working on it. The Commission is working at proposals. So we expect that the framework will be much clearer, and at least that this debate can be quantified, that we can have sound figures, clear plans. In my own company in Belgium, we have clear plans about reducing methane emissions everywhere where they happen. And by the way, at LNG terminals is one of the spots where we have the least methane emissions. Very controlled, small infrastructure, and we know all the places and we can manage them much better than in the past. Well, sometimes in the past, the design was different, so there were more methane emissions when you make works, maintenance, things like that. Now there is much more attention to that, and it's taken into account by engineers, by people who make operations. So I must say, for the infrastructure, on the European jurisdictions. I think that the situation will be clarified very, very soon. There are many initiatives, and they are all going in the direction of about making better measurements, about having also certification about the measurements, so that we can have a clear view about how much it is, and to also assess the plans to decrease them.
A question from Ilaria Conti, I believe, from the Florence School of Regulation. She's asking, there's a communication on smart sector integration that was released by the EU Commission this week. I don't think we're talking about the actual strategy that was announced and still planned for June. Apparently there was no mention of LNG in that statement coming out of the European Commission. How do you read this? And I guess, again, the question could be for you, Thierry Lescotenet, or any other speakers. Thierry Lescotenet, maybe you can say a word. Have you been following that? Do you read anything into that?
Well, LNG is part of the gas market in Europe. So if we speak about sector integration, LNG is part of the gas market. So that could be a way to interpret it. Probably the most important things in the sector integration is that the sectors of gas, all kinds of gases and electricity are working much better together. So that we optimize the energy system with all kinds of gases, infrastructure, and also conversion techniques, making storage where it is most efficient. And LNG is part of the equation. Perhaps it was just forgotten. Let's say I prefer to have short documents rather than long ones. So if it's included in the term gas, then it's fine.
Tudor Constantinescu, maybe that question you could also help us address. I don't know what came out of the European Commission this week regarding the smart sector integration, but you're quite well placed to know that. Did that overlook in a way LNG and the role it can play?
I think maybe there is a confusion because the communication will come, we hope to come end of June, and then to address smart sector integration, energy system integration, and also hydrogen. So these initiatives are planned for June. Of course, there is a website open where there are questions, opinions, and there is a page on this, but the text is for end of June. Now, I can say, reinforce what Thierry said, especially when you speak about gas markets. Of course, LNG is part of the gas markets, and LNG is playing currently a more important role than in the past, and with the diversification of routes for LNG, it's part of the diversification and security of supply strategy we have. So I think this is quite well anchored into the current policies, while of course, we have to be forward-looking, and it's all the discussion about the transformation, the modernization of the energy system to answer the needs of the decarbonization in long term, and even in the next 10 years to contribute better to the greenhouse gas emission targets we are planning to have.
Yep. Yorgo Chatzimarkakis, there's a question for you specifically about the potential role that Ukraine could play regarding hydrogen. Could you maybe say a few words about that? And I think afterwards, unfortunately, we will have reached the end of the conference, and I'll ask you to maybe wrap up in a few words. But Yorgo, first on Ukraine.
Yeah, thank you. Ukraine is one of our partners, political partners, energy partners. And in the case of hydrogen, we are in the very good situation that the new government, or not that new anymore, has appointed some weeks ago a special envoy on hydrogen. It's the president of the Hydrogen Council of Ukraine. It seems that Ukraine has three aspects that they are looking into. First is renewables. We have wind in the west and solar in the east. Second is pyrolysis. And third is also natural hydrogen gas fields, hydrogen fields, up to 30%. This is quite substantial and this is quite important. I would nevertheless also raise an issue on the cost aspects. I told you that our 2x40 gigawatt paper includes Ukraine. And we have also on liquefaction, we have some cost included there. So in our plan until 2030, we have foreseen 40 plants of liquefaction. And the overall investment in billion is 1.2 in order to produce 50 tons per day. So what you see here is that we have calculated the possible costs of these. And we would be happy, including Ukraine, but also our Northern African friends, to present this as part of the Green Recovery Plan. And I'm very happy to inform you that the Commission is open to discuss these figures and to possibly integrate it into this recovery plan. Thank you.
Okay, and while you still have the floor, maybe a few concluding thoughts from your side before we wrap up.
Yes, we were discussing whether the legal basis that we have at the moment and that we are modifying basically, even what we expect as a communication in June and possibly as a legal proposal in June next year, is a modification of the gas market. And the big question is that enough for pure hydrogen grids? The answer could be no. It is okay for blending hydrogen into gas grids. But if we start to build up backbones, and this is what the talk here also was about, then possibly we need a totally new approach, a hydrogen market design. So what I foresee, I'm very happy to discuss this with GIE, again, we are on a very friendly relation, is that there will be a very colorful map of the infrastructure, the gas infrastructure in Europe. There will be some backbones of pure hydrogen, but there will also be CO2 pipelines, there will be ammonia pipelines, and so on and so forth. And this is something we need to work upon. Thierry said next 20 years, I would rather say we should be faster. It's the next 10 years that are very, very crucial. So this event here, and thanks Frederick, helps a lot to bring these things forward. Thanks for organizing it.
Thank you. A few concluding thoughts from you, maybe, Jonathan Stern.
Thank you. Like Hugo, I found this extremely useful. Let me just, it was really a question to Thierry rather than, but also a comment. I'm wondering, given my previous remarks about how we communicate this to the suppliers of LNG who have been led to believe that they can land their LNG in the EU anywhere they want and always manage to and always find that it will find a home somewhere at a terminal, whether there may be a transitional period where terminals will be able to receive both LNG and other products like hydrogen. I think otherwise we risk having perhaps a cliff edge if we repurpose terminals that they are no longer able to receive LNG. So I think in the transition, however long the transition is, we need to really keep in mind that a whole value chain behind our terminals has been set up, and we probably need to give suppliers some very respectable amount of notice if we're going to change that. Thank you very much for allowing me to be on this call. I've really enjoyed it.
Thierry Descotenaire, maybe you can reflect as well. Actually, a very good and interesting point that Jonathan Stern just made.
Yes, I agree with the point. And actually, as Jorgo said, the future will be much more colorful. You may have a terminal now, which part of it would be for natural gas, for part of it with hydrogen, sometimes some other technologies developing. You can have tanks for ammonia, and you can have the same as for the liquefaction plants, where you can have an electrolyzers, but you can have also ammonia for manufacturing from some part of it, and ammonia going from one direction, hydrogen going to the other. you will have a future much more diverse as we see now. And then we need a framework that can enable all these technologies to find the best added value where they have the best added value, actually. To design a kind of market for within Europe for and in relationships with countries outside Europe so that we can make it happen. And here we touch also something which is quite important. It's about relationships between the EU and other countries. And we have to make a framework which enables them to invest in the production of green energy that will then be imported within the EU. And quite important work as well if we want to have these third countries working with us. Thank you very much for all the comments. It was very useful, I think.
Tudor Constantinescu, you have the privilege of the concluding thoughts here. Obviously, there's a big challenge for regulators bringing in all these different colors of gas that are coming now or soon to the market. How will the Commission approach this?
Yeah, thank you very much, Frederic. And how to say, a bit as a joke, I would say that this energy transition is like navigating between stranded costs on one hand and lock-in effects on another hand. But on a more serious one, I think it's very important and to work all together and not to leave anyone behind, to understand the needs of the consumers, to understand the needs of the society, but to understand also the needs of the industry, to understand the development on technology and the opportunities that technology brings to us, but to make best use of these opportunities in a way which allows us to realize the transition and to realize objective carbon neutrality in the most cost-effective way and integrative way with all the actors, and to enable the potential of the different solutions to play their role. We know that renewables will move into the center stage if we want to achieve a carbon neutral economy, but how we around this build the entire ecosystem, how we integrate the various energy carriers and in the different forms, not only electricity, as I said, gas and liquids, how we make best use of the e-fuels, how we make best use of the hydrogen and so on, will have to be a European project in which we all work together. And I want to thank you very much for bringing also this part of the industry on board, and to congratulate again Gas Infrastructure Europe with the initiative to look into this important dimension, at least for the natural gas market, which the LNG represents, and which will continue to represent, and we need to move ahead in a way which enables us, on one hand, as I said, to avoid lock-in effects, on the other hand, to avoid stranded costs, because this, in the end, have to be paid by the society.
Right. Thank you very much to our speakers for joining us today. Thanks to GIE for supporting this debate. And thanks to all those who joined us as well online. I hope the discussion was helpful and interesting to all of you. We'll be hosting more of these online events, I think, in the future, even after the COVID-19 crisis is over. So bear with us and hope we'll speak soon again. Bye-bye.